You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by RECO, your local guide for all things real estate investing in Colorado.
Hey, Colorado, Chris Lopez here. I've got a really important podcast slash public service announcement type topic today. You know, over the years, we've gone through different topics, mainly how to grow your real estate portfolio, how to go out there and grow and achieve the goals you want. Now, we all know it eventually comes to an end. We've talked about the importance of estate planning, getting your rental properties set up properly so they're protected and can pass on without probate to your heirs. But at the same time, there's so much tactical information for what happens when the unexpected happens. And unfortunately, every single year, I get one or two emails or calls from clients, usually the client's spouse, saying, hey, so-and-so unexpectedly passed away. Wanted to tell you. Also, I don't know what's going on with the real estate side of things. Can you help me out? And I do the best I can to help out, but it's always, you know, a very sad time. And that spouse, that person needs help. Well, the last 6 months, I had the very good fortune of meeting Shane Phillips, and we actually met through working on some deals together. He's a local banker, there's a lot of debt, and we're bringing some equity to the deal. But as we started getting to know each other, he's got this passion project that's turned out to help so many people in these unfortunate situations called First Steps Program, to help them understand what to do when bad stuff happens. Shane, I'm glad to have you here today.
Chris, thanks for having me.
So, before this, I'd actually just shared an email 2 weeks ago. I had one thing that said a client's wife emailed in saying, hey, that client unfortunately just, you know, passed away. And I kind of want to use that to set things up because a couple times a year it happens to us, to our clients, and you see it all the time. But I want to talk about what people need to know and what they can do and how your course and service can help them out. But I'll rewind it because I know you had, you know, event happen to you in life that set you on this journey.
Yes. Yeah. Well, again, thanks for having me. And just to share with your listeners a little bit about my past, when I was 16, my parents and sister were unexpectedly killed in a plane crash. And so I actually had just left the United States to be an exchange student. I was overseas when this happened, came back to the United States. And not only did I have to deal with the emotional side of losing my entire family, but we also had real estate. We had, my parents had a business, we had debt, not a lot of life insurance. And so at a pretty young age, I was forced to kind of deal with, you know, these things that some people don't have to deal with until much later in life. And so based on my personal experience, I have put together First Steps. I'll tell you a little bit more. So over the last 30 years or so, I've worked in the grief care community just as something that I'm passionate about. And along with that, I've grown my career in banking and finance. And I got to a place where in 2010, I became the chairman of the Heartlight Center, which is here in Denver, which provides free grief care for all different types of losses.
Heartlight Center?
The Heartlight Center, yes. And as the board chair there, I would attend the different groups that Heartlight provides, which includes a widow and widowers group. And the common refrain I kept hearing when I would attend these groups is, hey, you know, my wife managed all of our day-to-day banking. I don't even know how to log into our bank account. Or my husband managed the real estate portfolio. I don't know what we have, and I don't know what's going to happen to it now that he's passed away. And so I started to look for a resource to bring back to the Heartlight Center, to bring to the families that we serve there on kind of the emotional grief side. And there's 1,001 books on grief and 1,001 books on estate planning, but no true roadmap to help people understand the day that someone dies, what are the things that you have to do? What are the first steps? Hence the name. And so I wrote the book because it didn't exist. And so what First Steps contemplates is from day one, how do you plan and pay for a funeral? And then a little primer on estates, wills, and probate, because a lot of people know those words, but they don't really know what they mean and how they impact their lives when a loss has occurred. First Steps also covers what do you do with bank accounts and investment accounts? How do you make a life insurance claim? How do you get Social Security benefits? How do you get VA benefits? So the gist of First Steps is really to fill that gap in the first days when somebody's experienced a loss, to try to help them get on a path to recovery from a financial perspective.
And so this is something that does not replace estate planning.
Correct.
Or having a trust and a plan in place, but it kind of fills in one of the missing puzzle pieces, right? That's how I've understood it?
That's correct. So there are a lot of great estate planners out there, and they do a great job of kind of contemplating the entire estate and what should be in that plan. But they're really not in the business of, okay, so Bob has passed away. What do we do now, right? Same with investment advisors. There are a lot of really good investment advisors, but when someone passes away, their only real skill set is, okay, was there a beneficiary on this or not? And so what happens is people have this gap of kind of professional advice on all the things that happen when someone passes away that aren't really covered by, you know, another professional. You know, an investment advisor is not going to talk about the real estate. An estate planning attorney isn't going to talk about the investments. So the whole goal with this was to give people a roadmap for what are all the things that you're going to have to consider possibly based on what the estate looks like or what the decedent's financial condition look like. And then kind of gives people, you know, in the how to hire professional advisors section, if you've never had to have a CPA, what questions should you ask when you're interviewing CPAs? If you've never had a financial advisor and suddenly you have a windfall of investable money, what questions should you ask?
Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of get in some details here. So I'm going to use myself as an example.
Sure.
And all my listeners know, some have called me morbid, but I'm also like, I realize, hey, I can always drive down 25 and get hit by the buses, you know, the worst case scenario in my mind. So, you know, I'm in my 40s. I take care of the finances. I take care of the real estate. I take care of the day-to-day bills. And, you know, my wife really has no clue, you know, what's going on, how logging and stuff. She doesn't know how many like rental properties we have, you know, what stock accounts we have. And we've worked with Pam Moss, a local estate planner. I know a lot of our listeners have worked with her as well. We set up the trust. We have funded the trust. So in that situation, you know, there's the great time now. We're all alive and doing well. And then, hey, if the unfortunate happens, what can we do or what can I do as a husband, father, in helping my wife be educated and or using this? Like, how would that gap fill into there?
Yeah, great question. So I think the first thing is if you don't have a balance sheet, and I have a sample balance sheet inside of the First Steps course. It's very basic, but putting together a sample balance sheet of you know, all the properties that you own, how they're titled, and how they're owned, right? So maybe they're owned inside of an entity like an LLC, or I have a client that he owns rental properties with his brother, and his brother's in Chicago and the properties are in Chicago, but they each own 50%. So we just had a conversation recently about making sure when he redid his estate plan that those were all kind of considered in that estate plan and who his interests would go to in those properties. So yeah, at the very basic level, just having a list of assets and not just the real estate assets, but bank accounts, investment accounts, and anything else that your wife may or may not have access to today, but she would need access to if you got hit by that proverbial bus.
Yeah.
And so this could be useful as something, I think, preventative to review. But also, hey, if that timing unfortunately happens, like, it can also be a go-to resource for, hey, what the hell do I do? Right?
Yes. Yeah. So originally when I wrote the book and then created the online course, my focus had been on the 70% of Americans that don't do an estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent to that, as we've started our consulting practice, we have started working with families before loss. And we have one family here in Metro Denver that has a sizable real estate portfolio, which is out of state. They did get a very nice, expensive estate plan created, but those properties were never funded into the estate plan. And that was one of the things that we uncovered when we started working with them. And it was really at the request of their kids that we would sit down and kind of look at everything with them and see where the gaps were. And so you could take everything inside of First Steps, and instead of assuming that the person has died, you can assume they're still alive. And do you know the answer to the question that's being asked in that particular module? And if you don't know the answer or can't find the paperwork related to it, you need to do that.
We have a problem.
We have a problem.
I like that that process or test. I want to rewind because, like, you mentioned something that's very important. I think for a lot of people, they don't know, they can gloss over. So, you know, we talked about some of the common mistakes you see. Mm-hmm. And you touched on the first one, which was, hey, they had the estate plan created, but they didn't move the properties into it. Can you talk more about that and why does it matter? Because this was a nuanced thing that I learned when Pam did my estate plan, and she kind of read me the riot act saying, hey, make sure you actually do this.
Sure. Yeah. So your estate plan could say, you know, I own these 10 properties and I want them to either be sold or put into a trust, and the income that's generated will benefit my kids or my grandkids. So that's one thing to have the document that says that what you want to happen, but it's another thing to actually take the physical step. And in the case of this family that I just mentioned, the properties are out of state. So we had to work with a title company in that state, and we had to have the properties deeded into the trust. Mm-hmm. So that's the funding of that trust. If that doesn't happen, the properties are just sitting there. The plan says this is what we want to happen, but the trust doesn't own them, so it can't do anything.
And then when that, let's say that, you know, the parents die, well, then those properties would go through probate.
Correct.
Which is timely and costly, which is the whole reason you set up the estate plan in the first place.
Exactly. And because, again, these were out-of-state properties, but they live here in Denver, we would have, or the family would have to open probate both in the other state and here in Colorado. So now you're talking about two probate cases, right? And for your listeners' knowledge, probate is different everywhere. It can be different by county.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Even in the same state, it can be dragged different between Arapahoe and Douglas County?
Yes, it can.
I did not know that.
Yes. And then you get into...
Wait, so if I had a property in Arapahoe County and a property in Douglas County, they could actually go through... Would that be two different probate courts then?
It's possible. Not always, but it's possible. But it gets more nuanced in states like Louisiana, where they have a totally different kind of legal system.
Yeah.
And so they have parishes there instead of counties. And so it's hard to dispense... and I'm not an attorney, but it's hard to dispense general probate knowledge because it's so specific to the area in which the probate is being opened.
Great reminder for everyone. First off, go get an estate plan done.
Yes.
If you're a real estate investor, get one done. Second, make sure you fund the properties into the trust, because I've heard, like you have heard, a couple of horror stories. Well, then unfortunately, the properties aren't in the trust, and that creates expense and issues. And I think a lot of times probate can eat like 10%, or like it can eat like a significant chunk.
It depends
on the assets, right?
If it's if it's a contested probate where, you know, maybe you've got a long lost uncle who's making a claim, that would get into probate litigation. So I'll tell you, in my own personal circumstance, my parents owned a small business, and they were 39 and 40 when they passed away. So they were, you know, this whole concept of an estate plan was the furthest thing from their minds.
Yeah. Right?
And so I ended up owning a software company at age 16, but I wasn't old enough to own it. So I had to have an attorney that represented me that owned it. And ultimately, I sold the business to the employees on a promissory note that I'd get a certain portion of the profits. They weren't able to keep the business viable. So whether you're talking real estate or you've got a closely held family business, making sure that you have a plan is critically important. Because if you don't, and you know, maybe some people don't care, you know, my kids can just deal with it. But I think most people would want to make it a little bit easier when they're gone.
I would agree. All right. So something else that we had talked about before hitting the record button was making sure all the bank accounts had beneficiaries or had instructions for when the person passes. Now, you looked at this both as, you know, what you've gone through, but also you're with a local bank.
Correct.
And I think you've seen like both sides of the aisle. Could you walk us through
Sure.
the importance of it and some horror stories?
Yeah. So if you have, let's just take a real estate investor. So you've got an operating account for your 10 properties, and that's where the mortgage payments go in, or where the rents come in and then the mortgage payments go out of. If you're the only signer on that account and you come to me at the bank and say, hey, you know, or say it was the dad, dad was the only signer. So son comes in, dad passed away. I'm sorry, I can't give you access because A, you weren't a signer. B, he didn't fill out a payable on death, which is, you know, something that you can stipulate the account go to a certain person. It wasn't held jointly with anyone else. So that puts the bank in a really hard spot. And, you know, we're all about risk management and liability. So we're not going to just write you a check just because you're the son of the person that passed away. So it's really important to make sure that you have a plan for what would happen with those bank accounts. And it's not just on investment properties, but even on somebody's primary checking account. If they have, you know, maybe they have a joint account with their spouse, but then they have, you know, a play money account or something like that, that only their name is on. If there are no instructions to the bank as to what should happen to that account, we legally cannot give you access. We can't tell you how much is in the account. And that gets really frustrating for people because, you know, some people are able to, you know, go in online, you know, maybe they have access to that account and they can look and see. But truthfully, you can't move any money out of that account once the person has passed away. So I think the really important thing is take an inventory of the accounts that you have and figure out, A, should we have a payable on death for this? Should we have a joint tenant on this? One of the things I've done in my own planning, I have five kids and three of them are adults now. So either my wife or I are on their bank accounts. We don't look at their balances. They're adults. They can do what they want with their money. But if the worst case were to happen, being able to access those accounts because, you know, we're on those accounts is important. Same thing with vehicle titles.
So you're on, so your kids have their own bank accounts and you're on their account as well.
Correct.
In case anything happens to them. And are they on your accounts as joint, or is that done through like the pay on death instructions?
So my wife and I are joint on everything.
Okay.
But I just bring that up because I've had this situation happen where a young adult has passed away.
Yeah.
And through one of the Heartlight webinars that I do monthly just to help people. I've had probably three occasions in the last year where, you know, a 22-year-old, you know, passes away. The mom or the dad wants to get access to the bank account, but they can't. So, and I was going to mention also on vehicle titles.
Yeah.
So until your kids are really launched and, you know, either they have a spouse or a partner or they've created their own estate plan, it's really important just to think about those things.
I never even thought about that angle. That is, very, very helpful and a whole different thing to think about. Okay. What else, do you wish more people knew about? Like this, they can prevent things preventatively. Or something bad happens, like what other items should people know about?
That's a big question. So I think the next thing would be investment accounts. So if you have a 401k or an IRA, typically they encourage you to set up a beneficiary.
Yep.
When you set up the account. Now, through the consulting business with First Steps, we're actually dealing with a situation in California right now where a gentleman passed away. His son lives here in Colorado and he contacted us to help. He does have a 401k, but he never set up a beneficiary. I don't know how it got through the system that way, but now he is going to have to go to court with his ex-stepmother to figure out who gets access to that 401k.
That does not sound like a great situation.
No. And they're not best of friends either. So looking at your investment accounts, making sure that you have a beneficiary set up, and that beneficiary could be an individual, so a spouse, kids, or you could, if you have a trust created, you could make the trust a beneficiary. So I think the biggest piece of advice I could give people is look at your kind of total financial picture and think about the assets that you have. And if you were to die today, do you know where each of those assets would go?
I am going through my mental checklist right now and I've got some question marks on there. You're creating some to-do list and a little anxiety for me, which is good. Wow.
I might add one more kind of vignette that I experienced personally, but I also helped somebody with. So I got a call one Sunday from a friend of mine who was a physician. She had a nurse in her practice whose husband literally died when they got home from church. He went upstairs, he was changing, he was in his closet, died of a heart attack. So the next day, I went to visit with this widow, and she was one of these people that did not know how to log into their bank account. And I went with her to their bank, and you know, she produced evidence that she was an account owner on there. She just never logged in. That just wasn't her thing. And one of the questions she had for me was, I don't know if I can even afford to stay in our house. She was very removed from their financial situation. And I said, well, let's do this. Let's get 12 months of bank statements and let's see where you're spending money. And so let's build a budget backwards from your bank statements. So we did that, but we kept seeing a reoccurring charge for $43 a month. That was an ACH transaction. And she had no idea what it was. So we asked her bank to provide the information on where this ACH was going. And it turned out it was going to a very large life insurance company. Her husband had $1 million life insurance policy that she didn't know about. And so that really changed the picture for her.
Yeah.
For me personally, about 6 years after my parents and sister passed away, I was helping take care of my grandmother. She lived in the house that my parents had lived in. And the phone rang and it was a marketing call from a large life insurance company. And I said, hey, you know, they asked for my dad. And I said, well, he passed away 6 years ago. And so if you could take us off your marketing list, I would appreciate that. And so the call ended. And then about 20 minutes later, they called me back and said, did you know that your dad had a life insurance policy with us? And I didn't. And so I bring all this up because hundreds of millions of dollars a year go unpaid on death claims because people don't know about life insurance policies. So within First Steps, I've got links to different organizations that you can go to that can do a search to see if your loved one that's passed away had a life insurance policy. The life insurance company isn't looking to find out whether the person has died.
Yeah.
Right. But once they're notified, they've got to, you know, pay out on that policy.
Random question here, with your situation and your father, is there a statute of limitations for, like, I mean, that was 6 years before we knew about it. Does it eventually, like, or do you know, it's like, oh, well, you didn't claim it after 4 years, so therefore you forfeit it, or the premium wasn't paid, so you forfeit it? Like, how does that work?
You know, that's a great question. And again, since I'm not an attorney,
yeah,
I'm not going to espouse a legal opinion on that. My guess is that it is written into the policy as to how long it could be claimed.
Yeah.
But that's purely a guess.
Okay. I will go read my policy documents then. All right. So, you know, Shane, something else that, you know, as we were talking about this is, like, you know, obviously your wealth of information, the course you have, and I know you're actually adding some real estate modules to the course as well to go, not just the courses, you know, all financial matters. And then you got a couple, like, you know, very deeper dives into real estate. So something that I'm very excited to share with our listeners is that we've set up an agreement with for you and First Steps where our listeners and our clients can get free access to the course, the current one you have, and the new real estate ones that you're putting out there. Because, you know, one of our big missions here with the content we provide, and especially like the property law analysis, to help people understand, hey, here's how I go out there and grow wealth, but also how do you, you know, plan for passing on as well. So I invite all of our listeners, and hopefully this is on a preventative case, come watch the course. I have on my list now to actually go through with my wife, and I think we'll probably fail a lot of the steps based on what you're saying, but actually go through to, that's a stress test. Hey, if that were to happen,
right.
Doesn't, because my wife doesn't have to log in the bank accounts online, I'm realizing, like, there's a lot of things that she does not know about. So I'm going to use that personally as a way to help, like, you know, decrease our risk on anything. But first, I want to say thank you for creating the courses and also allowing us to set up a deal so all of our clients and listeners can get the course for free. So how long is the course in general? I know you got the current one, you're adding two real estate modules.
Yeah, so the general course is about an hour and a half. And the way this is set up is there's no quizzes, there's no tests. There's a video introduction from me to each module. And then you can watch the module. And then at the very end of the course, you can actually download a PDF copy of my book that has all the checklists in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can print the pages that are important to you. It's also designed that you don't have to do it in chronological order. So you'll see when you log in, I mean, maybe a death happened 30 days ago, and you've already been through the funeral planning and paying for that. So you might not need to watch that first module. Or maybe all you care about is, you know, the Social Security benefits module. So again, you can kind of go in and take the pieces that are important to you, or you can watch the whole thing and then download all the materials as well. I also have an appendix that includes important links for each state in terms of where to obtain death certificates, bar associations, CPA organizations, and that's available at the end of the course as well. In terms of the special course that we've created for Property Llama, the added modules are what happens to real estate in probate, and then what happens to mortgages in probate. And these modules are designed to give the viewer just kind of the context of what they need to be thinking about. Again, as I mentioned earlier, probate is different wherever you live, but it's really kind of a primer to understand what you might expect. And again, the same thing with mortgages. What happens to that mortgage when somebody passes away? Because their death does not expunge the mortgage. And so I have a lot of tips in there in terms of making sure that you're contacting the bank. It's better to be upfront than to try to hide when it comes to these things.
Does the death trigger the due on sale clause for the mortgage?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Or no. It probably depends on a lot of factors, right?
Right.
Okay.
So if the properties were sold, obviously that could be triggered. Also, if they're transferred to somebody else within the family, it could trigger that.
Yeah.
But there's also been some legislation under Dodd-Frank that allows inheritors to assume mortgages without necessarily qualifying. So I cover that. Again, there's a lot of detail in these things. So the information that I cover is really kind of designed to help people think, okay, should we be talking to an attorney about this?
Yeah.
What should we tell the mortgage company, et cetera?
Great. And if people want the course, we'll put the link in the show notes. And then make sure you use the coupon code PROPERTYLLAMACARES. So all one word, PROPERTYLLAMACARES, C-A-R-E-S. And that coupon code will get you in there for free. And if for some reason you can't find the link or the coupon code, just email me and I'll get it to you for sure. So Shane, thank you so much for coming out here. Now, one last question I have for you. You have the course. Does the book go in parallel to the course? Do people need to copy the book as well? Or is that included in the course now as you've kind of evolved? That was one thing I was not sure on.
Yeah. So again, the entire PDF copy of the book is available as a download inside of the
course.
That's
right. Okay.
And the materials, there's one thing covered in the book, whether you buy it on Amazon or download it inside of the course, and that's social media. I haven't addressed that in the course because it's evolving so fast. So my hope is that within 2024, we're going to have another more of a living document related to social media, because it's kind of the Wild West when it comes to what's required. There's no law that governs what Google or Yahoo or, you know, any Facebook has to provide to you in terms of digital assets. So you'll see if you download the PDF version, Yahoo at the time of writing would never give you access to someone's email account.
No matter what.
Right. And there was actually a legal case about a famous author who had the drafts of like his fourth book, and nobody could get access to it electronically. Now, Google will allow you access if you jump through enough hoops. And recently, Apple introduced a kind of a legacy planning thing. In fact, I just set it up this weekend.
For you?
If I were to pass, my wife has a key. It's like a 16-digit randomly generated key. And she can give that to Apple. And that is my authorization to unlock my phone and give her the contents of my phone. So my point in all of this is, as digital assets become a bigger and bigger part of our lives, and there's no federal mandate for how to handle access to digital assets, my next endeavor is to build that database of how do you get access, because it changes. Facebook will allow you to memorialize somebody's profile. But Instagram is a little bit different, and I haven't even gone down the TikTok road yet. So that's kind of the brave new world in assets and managing those post-death.
Yeah. I never even thought about that aspect of things. Well, Shane, thank you so much for coming on the podcast to share your story and share some tips. And, you know, some very tactical steps out there. And if anyone wants the course, again, go get the link below and go Property Llama Cares for the coupon code. And if anyone out there has any questions that I can ever help with or Shane, please reach out. A couple times a year, I help, you know, the widow navigate going from self-management to property manager or what to do with a property. If you're ever in that situation, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to help you in any way I can on some real estate stuff. Hopefully get you access to the first steps course. You know, we're all here to grow wealth. Eventually, it's time to pass on the wealth. And hopefully we can be resources along with the course to help you pass along the most efficient, effective way. So thank you, Shane.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks for listening. Again, go to use Property Llama Cares for the coupon code and reach out to me or Shane, if we can help you with anything you need. Thanks a lot.